I was texting with JB, as we affectionately, as I affectionately refer to him. Some of us, I ain't the only one. And around, during the beginning of the show, when we were listening before the show, I was listening to Democracy Now. I was like, wow, they having the same segment that we're having on Cuba. And he texts back, it's not going to be the same. I don't think it was the same. So let's shift gears. We're joined by Dr. Jared Ball, who is a father and a husband. After that, he's a professor of communication studies at Morgan State University in Baltimore and is the founder and curator of iMixWhatILike.org, a multimedia hub of emancipatory journalism and revolutionary beat reporting, and author of the soon-to-be-released The Myth and Propaganda of Black Buying Power. JB, welcome back to Voices with Vision.
It's always a pleasure. I appreciate it.
Hey, brought you on, and I'm just to tell the listeners why I asked you to come back on the show, is that I saw a tweet, and I'm assuming that the quote was yours, because it was in a little graphic thing, and it says, it was something as de-recognized as everyone's seeing how an emptied-out, twisted form of socialism is being used to preserve the rotting corpse of capitalism. And I was like, yo, man, let's talk about that. Break it down. Because I resonated with it. Because I was seeing it. I think I was seeing it. So I wanted to get us on to share about that. So maybe you could start, because we don't have a lot of time. And I know you have a good historical background and all kind of, current news. You also shared that Wall Street. Oh, that's what I meant to ask them about the Wall Street Journal article with Bernie Sanders and the red baiting kind of thing. But what is emptied out, twisted capitalism? How is that being used right now?
Well, the words are, those particular words are mine, but the sentiment is old. And I'm sure I'm not the first to refer to what we're seeing is the rotting corpse of capitalism as an economy and social system. But the short version is, we're seeing it. I'm looking at the news again, even this morning, all the discussion and the debate about how much of our tax dollars and how much of our shared created wealth is being redistributed at the hands, at the direction of those we have nominally elected to a private handful of wealthy elites. Who are, in fact, as we are speaking, begging for the redistribution of our shared created wealth into their pockets with a variety of associated mythological claims attached to it. And that, by the way, is the point of the Wall Street op-ed I sent you just before the show, which was that the context requires that while we witness a variation of, and I'm saying a distorted, empty variation of socialism, it's not being described in that way, and it's being described, or it's occurring while actual socialist countries and actual attempts at socialist revolutions, for instance, in Cuba, are being actively, horrifically described. Anti-historically described in the op-ed pages of the most powerful, popular, economic journals and elite publications, targeting the elite meant to manage the conversation that we're all, meant to follow behind as the consuming audience of this product. So I'm just saying, so socialism, the simple version is the transition to a communist, utopia or whatever, fantasy. It's just that we all create this wealth, whether it's our taxes, whether it's the $20 trillion gross domestic product for the United States that we all participate in when we pay a bill or pay a toll or buy a burger. Everything we do helps create all of this money. And yet we have to watch a phony debate between different corners of the ruling elite as to how much of our money will make it back to us to help us make it through this pandemic and crisis.
Go ahead.
The last point I wanted to make very quickly is that what really always upsets me the most when these things happen is that the debate is so phony and it allows for the existing structure to re-justify and re-legitimize itself. So the Democrats now get to look like some sort of resistance force as they battle Mitch McConnell over, again, what are ultimately the scraps that are to should be ours anyway, especially in a moment like this. And, you know, so that's the last point I just wanted to add very quick.
No, that's true. That's real stuff. I mean, it really sickened me when the first proposed relief package was $50 billion. $50 billion that they approved. In fact, that was the executive order one Trump signed right away. And then people are like, you know, no one's talking about the fact that, and then making it sound like it's so difficult. No one's talking about the fact that that's like a mere 5% of the military budget. It's like the military budget's like $970-something billion, and that's an annual thing. This $50 billion they were suggesting to help, you know, people, was a one-shot deal.
Okay.
Now they had to up it, you know, because of how things are going. They had to up it, and now they're talking. Was it said like a couple trillion or a trillion?
But even that. Skipped. So, but to me, that's again why I think our focus, to the extent that we go in this direction at all, needs to be on the GDP, because even that military budget is but a fraction of the gross domestic product of the country. And if we're creating $20+ trillion every year just by every single thing we're doing, nobody in the country should be debating over anything. There should be no, the only question should be at this point, who gets all of that money and why is anybody asking for anything? I just saw another story. They're talking about a bill being put before Congress saying they want to give a $30,000 credit to everybody's student loan debt.
Yeah, that's
$30,000 is pennies. By the way, the first point that people should I think draw from that is that's barely the average annual salary of a working person in the United States, $30,000. So that should be one parallel we draw from that number. And then that should immediately make it clear that if that's the average salary of a working person in this country, to the extent that anyone has student loan debt, $30,000 relief package is going to be nothing. They need to, just cancel it. $1.7 trillion, I think, would cancel the whole thing, which is, again, 1/20th of the gross domestic product of 1 year. So I'm not interested, you know, so all of them just look soft and punkish to me, and it's frustrating that we have to have all these debates and arguments, and then most important to me is how these concepts of economic models and histories are just totally distorted. So as we're watching, that's again just the point of that tweet was just to say again, we are witnessing what should be happening on a regular basis at a bare minimum for all of us, which would make it, which would make even a pandemic like this be more of a mild irritant, relatively speaking, than the kind of crisis it's becoming now. Even if we have to shut down for a while, we have generated so much money that the country should be sustainable for a couple of months or however long it takes for us to get back on our feet. And nobody should be worried about whatever bill they're going to pay or debt that they're going to suffer or what healthcare crisis that they're going to incur. And then the last point that related to that specific, tweet also is that we're watching the inability of a country to produce what we need in terms of medicine and safety equipment, in part because the factories that would have been producing that have all been shipped overseas, so that we can further exploit workers in other countries that didn't have the relative benefit of a labor movement that we have almost been erased from our memory from 100 years ago in this country. So, I mean, it's all of this is really frustrating on top of what is already obviously the most frustrating part of everybody trying to deal with and stay healthy and survive this pandemic. But it's just the way that all these items and issues and related ideas are being discussed is for me, and I know for some of us, equally frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, for me, I think, and this is where the upside would be, because we know that this is the world we live in and it exists. But this crisis, if there's an upside, and I think I remember something being sent by Katia to all of us, just sort of helping us look at the bright side by somebody, is that this gives us an opportunity to, like, when I can bring you on the air and break down things the way you did and our previous guests, and then we also have organizations that are being able to enlighten people, because largely a lot of this goes on because people don't understand. Like you said, the understanding of what's happening is not there. But this helps us put this understanding. It's very unfortunate. I'm not saying that this crisis is a good thing to happen. That's just not. But it's an opportunity we should see to expose capitalism, as to expose the condition as a rotting, twisted economy. Not rotting economy, because people don't believe it is and understand it. And then when people like Helen Yaffe can get on and actually tell us, you know, well, we need to. It's a whole different orientation that needs to happen. It's not. It's about the economy, but also about a culture that we can develop. That is where people, you know, think about each other, and it's not this individual thing. Instead of a run to this grocery store, people are panicking because the system's not designed to address a situation like that. We can have some sort of orderly, rational, you know, going to the grocery store. We can have, like you said, factories and things that are designed and, you know, that are made for the production of things that people need versus the production of some few to get a profit. And this is a chance for us to kind of get toward that better world. I wanted to ask you, though, a little bit more on the article you shared with me from Wall Street Journal. I've seen where, you know, they were attacking Bernie for this kind of stuff, but that specific article, and I was only able to skim it because you sent it to me because, like, right before the show. Is there anything about that in particular that you wanted to share in terms of, one, it's the Wall Street Journal, it's media, it's, like, from what I read, it was really giving ways why Cuba shouldn't be used as an example by people like Bernie Sanders, who really, you know, isn't going far enough in when he talks about Cuba, but that's just me. Your last thoughts?
Well, I just, you know, there's a lot to be said about that point, too. I don't think Bernie has done enough of a good enough job. I think he'd be doing better in the polls if he did was a stronger advocate for socialism in the Cuban Revolution and stopped focusing so much on Scandinavia. And its racist collapse relative to what it should be. Anyway, the point that I've
been, oh man,
the reason I sent it,
go ahead.
The reason I sent it was that somebody was Devin Springer, a podcaster, was asking about it, and I just happened to look it up in advance of the show. It's perfectly related to this conversation because it's, again, the Wall Street Journal trying to take the position that when people try to speak positively about what has come out of the Cuban Revolution, they do so ignorantly. So without any support or evidence of its own, it just makes claims against Cuba's government claim of successes around education and healthcare, et cetera. And just simply says it's not as good as Cuba claims, and Cuba's likely lying and fixing the numbers.
Likely.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, there's no evidence, but the point just being that the reason I think it's relevant here is that even as we're watching the collapse of this society's economic model, they're still attempting to produce propaganda or so-called knowledge that supports it and attacks. Models that we could look at and build upon. So in other words, instead of saying, as I think many of us would likely say, whatever shortcomings we have found in the Cuban Revolution have likely more to do with all of the constrictions put on it by imperialism and Western support of the United States than the ideas itself. And let's build from that as opposed to saying, let's first look at all the things it's done wrong and focus on that. In other words, especially as we're watching those in power begging for more of our resources that we've all created and arguing about how many of those crumbs will be left to fight over amongst ourselves.
Oh, man. I ran out. I should have asked you this from the very beginning about the first one. It's like, particularly media and understanding, this nonstop coverage around the coronavirus and all that we just covered on this show, with all this, they don't give a whimper about Cuba. I mean, like, how is that? Some people would say that's not even possible. I even have But how is that possible? Because
it's enormously possible. If you if propaganda works best in an overt fashion, in a sense that the more it's discussed in a certain frame, the more people are convinced that they're hearing an honest discussion. So you can talk about coronavirus all day and talk about it limited to individual cases and deaths and survival rates and masks, et cetera, and never talk about it in the context of the conversation we've just had here. And that's a brilliant way of dealing with what you obviously can't omit without having the conversation bleed, pun intended, over into areas that you don't want it to go into. So it's a perfectly logical propaganda technique. One, by the way, just to quickly point out, that worked brilliantly for Obama. It was an express technique of the Obama campaign in 2008. Put him everywhere. Nobody can keep up with the message. And they'll just be put into a trance by the ubiquitousness of his image. The same thing is happening here. Corona, 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 corona. And there's really very little substantive conversation about what is underlying the underlying structural causes of it, including the deforestation, the encroaching imposed overpopulation, okay, not because of too many humans, but because of too few taking too much land, et cetera. These are the real problems that we have to deal with that are never discussed. So it's a brilliant technique.
Well, thank you, brother. We're speaking with Jared Ball, quick curator and founder of iMixWhatILike.org. We got to get you back, talk about the myth and propaganda, black buying power. That's a wrap. You listen to the Voice of Vision, and you can check us out on Google Play Music, iTunes, Play FM apps. So look out Voice of Vision on Facebook. We're Facebook based too. Craig, sorry, you know, it would work different if we were looking at each other. if you're not fighting. If you're not fighting for the liberation of your people, fall back.
Fall back.
It goes F-A-L-L-B-A-C-K. Fall back if you ain't trying to ride for your people. Fall back if you ain't trying to die for your people. F-A-L-L-B-A-C-K. Fall back if you ain't trying to ride for your freedom. Fall back if you ain't trying to die for your freedom. L-I-B-R-B-G, we live F-R-E-D-I-E. We lace music with culture, something to bring us closer. Kick true, the young black youth.